Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, November 1st, 2021. To begin with, as you know, this meeting is being recorded and as usual, the meeting audio will be placed on our website. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone call. As you may recall, you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make some comments, you can virtually raise and lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute and or unmute your voice. To raise or lower your virtual hands, if you go under reactions, click on the hand raise icon, that will do the trick. Everyone is on mute at this time and I would request to please keep yourself on mute unless speaking. This helps eliminate any external noise. So in advance, thank you. As you know, we do have interpreters on this call with us. And before speaking, if you would please state your comment, your name before your comment, that helps them knowing who's the speaker and also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at the moment. Chair Posner, if you would, I would go ahead and share my screen and read today's meeting agenda.
Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. So if everyone would give me a quick second, I would like to share my screen. Read the meeting agenda out loud for everyone's convenience. I'm hoping my screen is visible.
It is.
Okay, thank you. So I would read the agenda. Afterwards, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. That would be followed by Dr. Posner, approval of agenda, prior meeting minutes, and the board report. We have wonderful guest speakers today, Barbara Moulton and Darby Dickerson. They would give us information about customer complaints process from customer relations, and they will also give us information about customer information operations. Followed by Hedinger Award Committee discussion. As you know that we've had the nominations for it, and today we will go through some discussion about the same award. We have public comments, followed by the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting report, which will be followed by the Metro Access Subcommittee report, and the meeting will adjourn at 7:30 p.m. At this point, I would stop sharing my screen. That concludes the agenda for today's meeting. I would ask anyone on the phone call at this time or joining through the video conference. If you intend to make any public comments, please do let me know. You can send me a chat message to let me know that you are interested in making public comments so that I can put you on the list. As already discussed, I would just give a friendly reminder to our presenters. Please describe your presentation for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. With that, I would go ahead and take today's roll call. So the AAC members, please confirm your attendance. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Rico is on the call with us.
I'm here.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
I'm here.
Thank you, Marcy. Melanie Henderson.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Caffin will not be able to join the meeting today. He informed us in advance. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner.
He's
Dr.
muted.
Posner, I know you're here.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
Present.
Thank you. Denise Rush. Ms. Rush is on the call with us. Paul Semelford. Patrick Sheehan. And Kelly Simonon.
Hello, glad to be back with y'all.
Welcome back, Kelly.
Yes.
All right, that concludes the roll call for today's meeting.
This is Pat, I'm here.
Pat, thank you. Let me mark you present. Okay, so that concludes the roll call for us for today's meeting. If anyone joins later or has not had a chance to confirm their presence, please do either send me a message in the chat or feel free to send me an email later on. Chair Posner, that was it for me. I would make my public comments announcement at the time of that section. I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you. Welcome back. It's great to be in November. It's great to have survived Halloween. And next week we get that hour back that they stole from us for spring. On Sunday at 2:15, we get to fall back and get that extra hour. Okay, can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Don't move.
Second.
Okay, it is moved and seconded. And with full approval and no opposition, we have the agenda. The agenda passes. Prior meeting minutes, and that will be the meeting in October. And can I have a motion to approve October's meeting minutes?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
And discussion. Any additions, subtractions, modifications requested for the minutes that you have received? Without comment and without objections, the minutes have been approved. The board report. Since this is the 1st of November, we haven't done anything in November. So the board report has not been written or finalized yet. In October, we've already approved the October meeting. I have done the presentation to the board last week. And the two additions to October, which I will talk about a little bit later, is the board has now approved the changes in FAIR policy to add equity to their priorities. And we can discuss that a little bit later in the meeting. In addition to that, I met with the three new members of the board, the federal representatives, and they are in great support of all of our priorities. And I passed on that we are in great support of their priorities also, as they have been presented and currently approved. This Thursday, there will be a finance subcommittee meeting of the board where the general manager will present his first draft of the coming budget. I have sent a copy of this to everybody. It's in your email. Look for it. Do not panic. I want everyone to remember this is a first draft. It has to be discussed at the Finance Committee this Thursday. It then goes to the full board, and there is a timetable on the last page for public hearings. A lot can happen between now, the public hearings, and the final acceptance of the budget. So this is informational only at this point, but be prepared when the hearings come. If there are things that we would like added or subtracted. But the good news is, both at the board discussions, the discussion with the new members, and in this draft budget, the flat fare for bus and rail on the weekends is being proposed. The $2 flat fare is being proposed. We have discussed with the board members, I have discussed with the board members, the concept of the flat fare for Metro Access. And they are coming up with a number. The initial number will be $4, which is twice the $2. But when I mentioned to the new board members that we are all old, we are all with a disability, why is it not twice the senior disability fare as opposed to twice the full fare? And they said, that's not right. We have to discuss that with the other board members. So as we follow along, we may be lucky enough to have the Metro Access fare be a flat fare calculated at twice the senior disability fare for bus and rail. So this is all to be followed and things that we may talk about at the hearings. So I think I have you all up to date. Once we have finished this meeting, our bus rail meeting, our Metro Access meeting, and the board has had their meetings, then I will send the final draft of the monthly report to the board for everybody's approval. And we will do that by email. So we're up to date as always. And I think we have covered that. I won't ask for an approval of a report that has not been written. And we can move on to item customer relations. Barbara, I know you are here. Ms. Moulton, would you like to take over?
Sure. Thank you so much, everyone.
Let me give you one heads up. The reason that you were invited is a number of the customers and the board members have worried about the complaint process in that the complaint is made and they receive a number that the complaint is being processed and then they never hear anything again. And so those are the questions that we're going to ask you is what happens to the complaint after it is made, it is received and acknowledged, and then what happens? And the floor is yours.
Thank you so much for that. Look forward to, we don't cover it in the presentation. We have some time for Q&A. That'll be great. And thank you, everyone. Okay, so the purpose, that we've got an 11-slide PowerPoint to go through. And again, my name is Barbara Moulton. I'm the Senior Director of Customer Care. I have with me the Acting Director of Customer Service, Darby Dickerson, and she'll be sharing the last half of the presentation with you. But we thought we'd start by providing some general metrics. We're going to focus on Q3 of this calendar year, as well as, and that's for our overall volume. And then we'll take a look at Q1, 2, and 3 for specifically drilling down to some of the accessibility complaints. So we can advance the slide anew.
Well, Barbara, I'll remind you that a number of our members are low vision or on telephones, cannot see the presentation. So if you can be as descriptive as possible.
Certainly. There were just words there, and I pretty much repeated. I read the slide. So as we go on, I will bring as much visual aid to each of the slides, because know that for those that can't see or have a hard time, there are a lot of tables with numbers, but I will talk through them. So
thank you.
No problem.
Yes, okay.
Could we advance?
Yes.
Maybe slide 3.
Okay.
There we go. First, I'll just share with you that there are actually 4 departments. The slide is actually, there's a little typo on the slide. That's okay. It says 3 departments, but there's actually 4. One is our customer information, and they handle trip planning, fare and schedule information. The second is customer relations, and they deal with customer issues and commendations. The third department is what we call our social media or engagement department, and they have live chat, online live chat with customers, and they deal with all issues, a variety of issues, but they're using a platform that deals with a lot of the Twitter. People talk to us on Twitter. And the 4th department is our lost and found department. And all told, it's a department now about 40 people. And we can advance the slide. Okay, this slide is the net of this slide is that, you know, we are, in terms of volumes, running at about 50% of our pre-pandemic volume. I'm sorry, can we go back? Thank you. And so all to say, as just ridership is down, so is our call volume is down. Although in this slide that I'm showing you, I'm comparing Q3 of last year, 2020, which we were in the thick of the pandemic, to Q3 of this year. We see a slight uptick, about 24% increase of just pure volume. Just to give you a sense, we received about 55,902 calls into our center for Q3 of this year, about a 19% increase over last year at the same time. We're answering about 98% of the calls, meaning, you know, people don't hang up, right? The call wait time is about 27 seconds. For a live operator. We received about 6,759 emails. And that really is about a 95% increase, right? Because people contact us about service. So when we don't have service, they don't contact us. So now that service is on an uptick, we're seeing slight increases across all of those categories. Even in terms of commendations, people don't just contact, the good thing is people don't just contact us to complain, they actually give us a that a boy or that a girl. So this year in Q3, we received 837 commendations about a job well done. And that's about 72% more than we got last year this time. So it's good news. Things are trending up in terms of volume. And we can go on to the next slide. And so by mode, right, we have bus complaints make up about 59% of our total complaint volume. Rail represents about 19% of our rail customers. And Metro Access represents about 22% of our overall complaint volume that would come right into customer relations. When I was speaking before, I was speaking about into the entire, that was customer information, that was lost and found, that was customer relations. So here on this slide, it's solely focused on customer relations where the complaints would come into. So it's not surprising to us that most of the complaints are coming through on the bus, that mode, particularly because there's so much interface and contact with employees, right? Because if you're on a train, you don't usually see your train operator. You know, you may or may not engage with a station manager. There's just much more of opportunity to find fault with the mode of bus. And that has been for the last, I don't know, I've been in call center business in transit for a long time, and that's constant. I've seen it in Boston as well. Why don't we advance the next slide? And here on this slide, I'm talking about social media. I'm talking about the volume that comes in on Twitter. And, you know, I know that's a new mode. A lot of people aren't familiar with contacting us on hashtag WMATA, right? Or rail information or bus information. But total engagement, right? That's the amount of time, that's a metric for us, engagement on social media. Those are the transactions that happen, the number of transactions that happen with a customer who has spoken to us on Twitter. So we've had 16,492 of those engagements with customers. It's up 37% from last year. So there's another metric that we track called mentions, and that's how many times WMATA or Metro is even mentioned on Twitter. And so we had 16,073 mentions. And a lot of times, as you can imagine, particularly let's just say, you know, whether it was in the last 2 weeks with the derailment, you know, there were a lot of things we could not respond to because of the NTSB investigation. So although there might be a lot of chatter going on in the Twitter sphere, we can't necessarily respond to everything, but we did reply to about 3,000 of those mentions and engagements. So it's an interesting new format of communication that people are using, and we try to stay, meet all of our customers where they're at, right? If you wanna call, you can call. If you want to email, you can email. If you want to tweet, you can tweet. Or if you want to do a live chat, we can do that too. So why don't we go on to the next slide? And again, I mentioned chat. Chat has increased 215%. Now, that sounds like a huge amount, and it is. But during this pandemic, we had the labor and resources to expand our hours of operation. And we did. We're available for live chat from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And so this slide speaks to customer satisfaction. We're about 83%. And I have to admit, we did take a ding, right? We were down 10% on that. Last quarter, it was 92. And our customer satisfaction, just so we know, comes from surveys that go out to to customers that have contacted us who have decided they want to take a survey. Many times on the phone, when you deal with, you know, other services and companies, they'll say, hey, you want to tell us how we did, stay on the line. And that's where we get that from. We had 3,640 requests to chat. That's a big number. On average, we do about 56 chats a day. The hold time is 13 seconds. And the interesting thing here, I personally find it just fascinating. The exchange on a mobile device, most times in chat, or even if it was at your computer or your laptop at home and you were chatting, that exchange goes on for 9 minutes on average. That's a long time to be typing and going back and forth with one of our agents. You know, most of our calls aren't that long, but chats are. So, and we're getting about 98% of the folks who have engaged with us on chat were able to respond to, and that's something called a capture rate. So I think, Anu, if we might go to the next one. Here's where, and I think you all will be interested in this. We've got a new metric that we rolled out this year. It's called 95 and 5. It really is measuring our customer response rate. Our goal is to respond to 95% of customers within 5 business days, okay? Let me see. So the bus is at 90%. So again, this is Q3. I'm referring to 93%. I'm sorry, 90%. 90% of all bus complaints that came into our center were responded to within 5 business days. And I don't mean just the automated response that someone might get, right? I mean, they got the answer to their question. On the rail side of the house, it's faster. It's 96%. So we're able to process more of that. And as a whole, because bus and rail, that is the 93%. So on average, we're very close to our goal. It's a new goal. We can do better. That's all I'll say. I'll wait for some more questions. Maybe we go on to the next slide. And here is where I want to pass it to Darby. And for those that are visually impaired, we're going to transition now and take a little deeper dive into accessibility complaints. Darby?
Yes. So on this slide here, we are looking at our total complaint volume for the first through third quarter of this year of 2021. So in bus, what we did was, well, bus, rail are the two modes that we're looking at. And we pulled the volume that when we received the emails in, that we marked them as an accessibility complaint based off of how the customer communicated to us and what they provided in to let us know that it was for accessibility. So for bus, we had in the first quarter, 21 total complaints. Second quarter, it was 26 complaints. And third quarter, 46 complaints for a total of 93 complaints for bus. For rail, we had 7 complaints the first quarter, 7 the second, 13 the third quarter, for a total of 27 total complaints. So the overall total by quarter for all complaints for bus and rail was about 120 complaints total that we received for the first three quarters of this year. Next slide, please. So what does that mean to us? So our accessibility complaints by those two modes is less than 1% of our total complaint volume. So overall, for first, second, and third quarter, we received a total of 9,763 complaints, and this is on everything. And for accessibility complaints, we received 120 of them, which equated to less than the 1% of the total volume that we received for complaints that was answered back for accessibility. Next slide, please. So this screen here, we're going to talk about the top three accessibility complaints by mode that we receive. So what are our customers complaining about? So for bus, we do receive several complaints about buses not following procedures, meaning the buses are not kneeling, the buses may not have lowered the seats for the disabled or elderly. So anything along those procedural type complaints there. We also received complaints on buses that did not stop. So they weren't service stop, they bypassed people. Maybe someone was a little slower getting to the stop and they saw the person flagging down the stop, but they passed by. And then also unprofessional behavior. And unprofessional behavior would be the transaction between the employee and the complainantee, such as, you know, maybe they had some interaction regarding fare, interaction regarding seating, and the person, you know, felt that it was not to their liking. So rail, we had accessibility complaints. So whenever we have an elevator or escalator outage, so just making sure that it is noted where the signage is, where the elevators are out of service and where to get to the escalators. So those type of complaints that shows what's going on with our elevator and escalators. Also again, unprofessional behavior, which mainly are interactions with our station managers at the facilities. And then following procedures. So elevators not turned on when they're supposed to be turned on during an outage, or no signage, nothing stating where that the elevators are down, and customers having to use alternative ways to get to where they're going. Okay, next slide, please. So that concludes our presentation, and we are here to answer any questions that you may have.
And Doris, you have been very patient. Your hand has been up, and you're on the clock. Go ahead.
Doris, you have muted yourself.
Yes, I won't start the clock until you are unmuted. The clock will start at your first word.
Are you calling me?
Yes, Doris.
Okay. I'm sorry. I wasn't quite aware of that at the first. And actually, I do have questions for this, although I pushed the star 9 because of something else earlier before you started the presentation. I was just wondering with regard to customer relations and customer complaints, whether you, do you break down issues in terms of high priority issues like something that would make you miss a bus, for example, bus pass-bys. Do you make those a priority? And if not, would you do it in the future? Because I think that's the most maddening thing when you're standing out in the cold weather, like in the winter, and a bus just passes you by. And I don't know what other kinds of high priority things you might add to that. On the accessibility side, I didn't hear anything whether there's a metric that you're counting in terms of inoperable enunciators, because that's critical to blind and vision impaired riders. And some of the other accessibility issues, like, you know, broken lifts or ramps or things like that. Do you prioritize the accessibility issues?
That's a Hi, Doris. This is Barbara. That is a great question. And within the call center, the first priority, and we do, there's a escalation of priority issues. And the first is always safety, right? If we get, which we have, whether it's bomb threats, whether it's slippery tiles and people have fallen, wet floors, that kind of thing, particularly as we go into the weather, that those are priority issues.
Yes, that's good.
You know, so those get, you know, those are our emergency. They go right to safety and the police department. The team works very close with them. And when it comes to, Doris, I'll tell you, I mentioned that I spent 24 years at the MBTA, and probably about 14 of those years, the call center was under me as well. And the top three complaints, one was service, number one. Number two was employee complaints. And number three toggled depending upon what the issue was in terms of whether it was our Smart Trip card or a maintenance, right? But the top two were always service, because that's what we're here to do, right? We're here to serve you. Everybody wants the train and bus on time, whether you're a person with disabilities or not. Every customer wants that. You want it there, you want it clean. And it's nice if we can get friendly in there too. Right? It's nice if that happens, and then it's really a trifecta. But every customer wants it, and that's always the number one complaint. And since I've been here for 7 years, that is exactly how the priority of complaints, if you will. It's always about service.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I might ask one other question.
You have to.
When will we return to having the hours of the customer information being open on weekends and in the evening and in the evening?
Yeah, I can tell you, Doris, our plan right now is I don't see that on the horizon, in part because of the self-service options now that are available, whether it's on our web, you know, which is obviously 24/7. People have the apps that they're using. And so we don't see an ability to extend the hours for the weekend.
Thank you. I see Tino, Patrick, and Thomas. So we'll start with Tino. You're on the clock for 2 minutes. I'll start it when you sit down and your first word is spoken.
Hi. Could you give us examples of the kind of complaints that are raised under accessibility? Are they mainly complaints from people using wheelchairs or walkers? Are they complaints mainly from people who are blind or of low vision? Are they complaints of people who have hearing impairment? Of the complaints, what are those at the top of the list of complaints?
Maybe Darby can speak to that a little bit.
Yes. So most of them are from, most of our complaints, the top complaints come from typically people who are wheelchairs or we don't get many. We get some blind complaints, not many, and not too many from anyone who's hearing impaired. So that's kind of how we prioritize.
What is an example or two of the wheelchair users' complaints?
most of them would become off the bus, and it would be the seating for the bus, lifting the seats up for the wheelchairs to fit in a timely fashion, and also lowering or kneeling buses for people who may not necessarily be in a wheelchair, but maybe have some impairments on getting on the bus. You need to kneel the bus down for them. Those are the complaints that we see for those.
So the complaints from users of wheelchairs are mainly or exclusively regarding buses and not trains?
I did not see many regarding the trains itself. I'm sure we do have some, but I haven't seen many of them, and I could definitely look into that and provide that to Anu.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thank you. I would assume a lot of the elevator complaints are from wheelchair people, but that's an assumption, not a fact. So let's move on to Patrick. You're on the clock as soon as you start speaking.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it. A couple questions. The first one I should know, but I assume that Metro Access complaints are sent through Metro Access. It's been so long since I've had a problem with Metro Access, I frankly forget how to file a complaint there. And that's the first question. Second question has to do with, thank you for breaking down the complaints as they were listed in your brief there. Does that change the way you train, let's say, drivers and station personnel? How do you take what you've learned in your metrics, and how does that impact the training that you're giving the drivers? And have you seen it be successful?
Thank you for that. Your first part of your question was about Metro Access complaints. We are actually the front end of we take their complaints and we transfer them. We have two different, you know, it gets tricky, two different systems, Patrick. We have one system, we intake the call and we input it into Metro Access database. And then Metro Access Group actually sees the complaint through to completion and resolution. Okay. So that's how that part of the business works. We work very closely hand in hand with Metro Access Group. And the second half of your question was around how we share, I think, this information with our operations staff and what we can do better. There we do quarterly. Darby's group meets with operations, bus and rail. We share the information, kind of the you know, the aggregate total, because you got to believe that they're responding to the complaints as we send them to them. But sometimes it's good to sit back and look at an aggregate total and talk about the trending and what's right. going on. And they, I wish I could say that I train the operators. I don't train them. But the information that we provide, whether it's about, you know, like I said, it's usually around employee behavior, rude tonality, or even specifically about signage that needs to be put up if something is out, right? And so we are constantly in communications with operations about the what we're hearing, you know, on the front line. And they hear it as well, you know, because they're right there. Right. So it is shared and incorporated into their SO. Many times their standard operating procedures are adjusted based on the information that you share, and then we share back to them.
Very good. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Thomas Mangrum, you're up next. The clock will start when I first hear your voice. Thomas, are you still there? Okay, Thomas is taking a break, so let's go to Kelly Simino. Kelly, the clock will start when I first hear your voice.
Hi, this is Kelly Simino. And just for context, I'm a wheelchair user. And so, as you know, like when something is there, when there's a breakdown within WMATA's system that causes for people with disabilities to be unable to use the services, or we get bypassed, you know, it tremendously affects our life and our ability to go to work and carry our day. And so part of the customer service is certainly, part of it is, you know, having the complaint made, but the other part is how it's addressed and how, more importantly, how timely it's addressed. Can you talk to us? I don't think we saw any stats on how long it takes to resolve a complaint and close a complaint. Can you talk to us about that type of time frame that you've been seeing, you know, in quarter three?
Sure. Hold on 1 minute, Kelly. I wanted to look at my own notes here. We spoke to it, and hopefully our PowerPoint deck maybe could be sent around to people so that they could have it. I don't know if that's appropriate, Anu, to share.
Actually, Barbara, this is Anu. I have shared it with the committee, but because it was done today, perhaps not everyone had a chance to review it.
Gotcha. So on slide 8, we did mention this new metric we just rolled out this year. And Doris, that because that was important too, because we're customers too of the system, right? And anytime you take the time to make a complaint, you know, in this day and age, we need to know how long it takes us to circle and close that loop. That's very important. And we threw out a metric, 95% of the complaints to be resolved within 5 days. Now, 5 business days, I should say. Our bus and rail complaints combined are being resolved. 93% of the complaints that have come into the center. And the number of complaints was around 5,000, I believe, this quarter. And so 93% of those were resolved and responded to within 5 business days. And there's a lot of room to be better than that.
And I guess this is Kelly, and I'm sorry. I guess that was maybe I didn't phrase my question in the right way. And that is, you know, what has WMATA established as its goal in resolving in a timeline? Because certainly 5 days is significant if you're talking about a broken elevator for a person, you know, in a wheelchair, or there's signage out.
Oh, I see.
How are you developing a plan as to how things should be resolved on a time basis?
I see. So your question isn't about our process in the call center. Your question is about other departments that are actually out there fixing the stuff, how quick they fix stuff out there that we share complaints about. I don't have that answer for you. I can say from the bottom of my heart that the intention at Metro is to be fast, right? Because we're all about safety and customer service. So whether it's an escalator, whether it's an elevator, whether it's, you know, brakes on a rail car, or slippery tile. I mean, yeah, we got to get out there and fix it because it matters. This is our bread and butter, so to speak, providing transit service. So I don't have the explicit time frame about how maintenance, the electrical, maintenance people, how fast they can get out. You gotta imagine though, when you think about all the little parts that need to be, that we need to have on the shelf, you know, to fix stuff. I don't know I know sometimes stuff is backordered, particularly now in the supply chain, you know, issues. I know that has affected some things for us as well, but I don't have that.
Is there any interconnectedness between what customer service is doing and the follow-up that's being done by these various departments? Because it seems problematic if there's not some congruency between what customer service does and what the maintenance or other departments are doing.
I'm sorry.
That was the buzzer. You've been hooked.
I like it.
Yes.
I like that sound. I need to get that for some of my meetings.
Okay. I will send it to you. It's on my cell phone. Marcy, you're up next for 2 minutes. The clock will start as soon as I hear your voice. You're muted, Marcy. Unmute. Marcy, you are muted. Anu, can you unmute Marcy?
Marcy? Okay, I think she's trying to unmute herself.
Sorry about that. Is there a system, or did you mention it? Like quarterly or every half year, that especially with the buses, the complaints go out to the actual drivers so that they know, and we don't usually use names. Would they have an idea of what complaints are being made so they could have checks on themselves?
Yeah, I believe you were asking about the complaints on bus operators, right? How, since you don't know their name, are these complaints getting to the right person? Is that the correct question?
No, I don't want, I'm just saying it has to go to the individual.
Correct.
But like every quarter that a list of complaints go out to all the drivers, like in an email or newsletter, so they're aware of what type of complaints are being made.
Oh, yeah. That's a good question, Marcy. Thank you for that. The complaints that we have on bus operators, we've even begun to segregate and really try to understand, is it about behavior or is it about their tonality when they speak? And all of the bus management, like I said, we meet quarterly. We talk about, you know, these drive-by situations that, you know, passing by a stop, whether it's, like I said, whether it was their behavior, were they rude, or was it the tone in which they spoke? Yes, management knows exactly what the trends and the issues are, and they use that information in training bus operators, refresher courses. They get a sense of what customers, we even do little scenarios. I do know this in their training and their refresher training, they do some role playing. So they can, and they're using some of the anecdotal things that we have heard about their performance. So it is used as a tool and they do know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you, Marcy. Thomas, are you with us now? Thomas Mangrum. Your hand is up.
Thank you. Hello.
Go ahead, Thomas. You have 2 minutes.
Okay. My question is this. It's 2 questions. Do you have people checking the escalators and the elevators on a regular basis all through the day of service? Because I was thinking you don't, and you just wait for the customers to tell you. It could delay how fast you fix them. And also, I was wondering this, because some people was asking about, do you have a telephone number when people want to get information? Because I know you go online and do it, but not everybody can go online. And I'm like president of Project Action. It's a coalition group for people with disabilities. So I want to know, do they have a way to do it by phone instead of going and Google or something like that? You know, so yeah. Regular people that might have learning disabilities could still get the directions.
Gotcha. That's a great question. Yes, we do. And the number is, do you have a pen handy?
Yes, I'm ready now.
It's 202. 637. 7,000.
7,000, okay.
And that's our main number, and we'll be able to help you.
Okay. But the other question, do you
and have your other question about the maintenance and the inspections of our elevators, escalators. I don't know the exact maintenance schedule and the inspections schedule, but I know that there is one, if that makes sense.
Because I was thinking that the operators that's in the subway and whatnot, they could go and check the escalators. They don't have to be mechanics. And they could check the elevators, what have you. So they could report it so they could get fixed faster.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you, this is what I do know, having talked to a lot of station managers, it frustrates the heck out of them too. Because imagine being in a station and an elevator or escalator not be working, and the amount of customers who come through there and complain about the same thing. They like to have good news to tell. Yes, but there is a schedule. I just don't know what that schedule is. I just know as a matter of operation, that would be a schedule.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Hey,
thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Barbara, I think that's all the questions. We are due to go into a discussion of the Hittinger Awards and then public comments. So anyone we missed, we can have speak during public comment. And Anu, did you get the phone number so that we can put it in a chat and send it out?
I have the numbers. I'll add them in the chat. Thank you.
Fantastic. Barbara, thank you. It was a great presentation.
And thank you so much.
No questions.
All right.
And the sound is an old car horn that you can find on the iPhone.
No, really?
Yeah, it's a freebie. So if you just go to the iPhone, and if you do the timer on the iPhone, and they give you a list of sounds you can use, and that's the old car. Aww.
Look at that. I learned something today. Darby, don't be surprised if we use that in our meetings next time.
I'm waiting for it.
Thank you all so much. Thank Enjoy you. The rest of your meeting.
Yes. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we're ready to go on to our discussion of the Hebinger Award. And before we do that for this year, I have had some questions about the Hebinger Award. And that was, can we nominate staff for the Hebinger Award? In the past, we have given a Hebinger Award to a member of the board, Kathy Hudgens. We have given the Hebinger Award to Antonio, our ombudsman, after he had retired. And we have some thoughts about the current staff of WMATA, accessibility, who have been so good during the pandemic and keeping things running in the face of a lot of problems. Dr. Moore Gwynn, who is our former coordinator and is now in eligibility. David Schaefer, who used to be our ombudsman, is now retired. And so there have been questions. And let me throw it open to the committee to discuss their feelings.
Well, before we go there,
currently here, I know what Mr. Blake is going to say because he wants to keep their heads down and that they're a team, they're not an individual. But I will point out to Mr. Blake that in the past, we have actually given awards out to teams.
I got you, but this is what I would recommend in terms of the Hebinger. In terms of the Hebinger, I would not recommend current staff or a team of current staff. But if the AAC finds in your hearts and minds that you want to recognize some members of the team, that's not out of order, but it should be, in my humble opinion, separate from the Hebinger, and we can treat it like a special thing. It's not something you want to give out every year. You really found this one to really truly be significant or what have you. We can do that in those years when such above the norm efforts are done. But I would strongly keep the Hebinger away from current staff or teams of staff, humbly we ask.
Yes, I will add to Mr. Blake that in the past we have given out special awards. Carolyn Bellamy was one of our special awardees. And Ms. Anderson was one of our special awardees. When there was reorganization, they went off to work someplace else, and the committee voted them special awards. They were not called the Hebinger Awards. They were love awards, and they were big statues and appropriate awards. So that has been done in the past, but I thought it would be worth a discussion of the committee. We've heard from Mr. Blake, and is anybody on the committee? I see Ms. Rush with her hand up, Ms. Ray with her hand up. So we'll go with Denise and then with Doris. Denise, take it. You're on the clock.
Ms. Rush, you're on mute. If you can unmute yourself.
We have Denise, Doris, and Patrick in that order. So I will start your clock when you first speak. Go ahead, Denise.
Chair Posner, perhaps she's not available at this very moment. Would you like to move on and then come back?
Well, we'll let Doris go for 2 minutes and then we'll come back.
Doris? Hello.
Who is this?
Hi, who did you ask for? I'm sorry? Who did you ask for? I muted my phone. Who did you ask to speak? I'm sorry.
Can you identify yourself?
Lynette Washington, I apologize.
Okay, Ms. Washington, we are not seeking public comments yet. This
okay, I apologize.
Is, no worries. This section is for AAC members.
I apologize.
No
I'm
worries.
Myself back
you.
On mute. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I finally could get unmuted. My phone was stuck. I'm sorry.
Go.
Okay. Well, I understand. I was told, I asked about those awards, and I was told that the person was doing their job, but everybody does their job. I don't understand if they do their job and they do above. Like Mr. Stevens, Antonio, he retired, and that's why he got it, but he was doing his job. But some of the people that go above and beyond, if we wait till they retire, we'll be dead. But they're still going above and beyond. That's my comment.
Thank you, Denise. And we'll go to Doris.
Star 6 unmute.
Doris, you would need to unmute yourself to speak and be heard.
There she goes. No? Okay, let's go to Patrick while Doris is trying to unmute herself. Patrick, go ahead.
Hello? Hello?
Doris, go ahead.
Okay, and I'm sorry. I thought I was unmuted. I think, personally, in the past 2 years, or almost 2 years, that WMATA staff, and particularly the staff that we deal with, the AAC, and people who are making policy about operations and for all three modes, bus, rail, and winter access, have gone way beyond what I expected would happen and have cared about the people in the region, including people with, especially people with disabilities. And I think it would be fitting for the Accessibility Advisory Committee to, yes, do a special award, because I know that there were specific criteria for the Hedinger World Award that were in writing. And it was mainly to recognize people with disabilities who, and or others who specifically advanced the cause of accessibility of public transit. So I do think that this time of the pandemic and the crisis we've been facing warrant special awards to WMATA staff. And I hope that the AAC will consider doing that.
Doris, thank you. Patrick?
Am I already out of time?
No, not yet. I am still on the clock.
Thank you, Phil. I will agree with Doris. I believe that, and I'd like to look at the criteria for the Hedinger Award again, but I know that the Hedinger Award was made towards an individual who was volunteering his time to make a difference in the for the disability community and spent a lot of his individual time doing that. So I think that that is a different set of criteria than what we have for the ADAP staff, or perhaps individuals on the board who have supported our endeavors going forward. I do believe that there is room for a second award, and I would agree. We've had some extraordinary individuals who've gone above and beyond what they need to do. And I think it's great to be able to recognize them. So I would support establishing a second award. And I think over time, I mean, try to figure out a good name for such an award with the sufficient criteria underneath it. There's room for two awards here, I think. Thank you.
Patrick, thank you. Having heard all of the discussion, what I'd like to do is ask for a motion from the committee, because there appears to be a universal feeling that a lot of people during this pandemic have gone above and beyond and given tremendous service to the disability community, both outside and inside of WMATA. And if someone would like to make a motion to give what we might call the Crisis Award, the Time of Need Award, the Pandemic Award, the COVID Award, we can have a motion of that sort, a second, and a discussion, and then we can move on in future meetings to decide how to do that. I'll also point out that we do have, WMATA does, have an award ceremony every year, where awards are given to staff. And ADAP staff have gotten awards in the past. And so we may do something as simple as recommending a person or persons to WMATA to give an award, or our own. So what I'm doing now is, having presented some thoughts, throw it open to the committee to make a motion for discussion.
Phil, I'll make that motion. This is Pat. I would like to make a motion that this committee put together the criteria for a second award, which could include members of WMATA staff or members of the board who have done provided extraordinary service for the disabled community and really gone above and beyond what's expected just in their job duties and activities. I think we need to put together the criteria for such an award, and I certainly would like to take the time to find a suitable name for such an award that would show our appreciation for the dedication and the work that people have done.
We have a second.
Second.
This is Doris. I'd like to second it.
The floor for discussion. Go ahead, Doris. What I would like to do is appoint Patrick as chair of a group to discuss this issue and ask everybody that would like to contribute to send your name to Anu, who will compile a list of people interested in working with Patrick to develop criteria for this award.
Thank you, Phil.
Doris, go ahead.
Yeah, I was trying to second it with a friendly amendment, which I hope would be friendly. I would actually like to see us give an award to, at the minimum, to the ADAP staff. With this Hettinger Award or this award program, because I have seen them be outstanding for almost 2 years now since we shut down. And I guess I feel the need or desire or feel it's very important to recognize them for what they've done And then my friendly amendment would be to give that award along with the Hedinger Award this year, because it's apropos, I think. And then to go forward to develop criteria for a more long-range regular award. Would you consider that, Patrick, a friendly amendment?
Hello? Yeah, hang on, Doris, I'm thinking.
Oh, okay, I just didn't know.
Yeah, no, that's okay. You know, Doris, I would agree with that. I would agree with that because I think they have done an extraordinary job. But I would like to be able to put award criteria and a proper way to present this as an award, either with alongside the Hedinger Award in years going forward, or as part of the overall WMATA award ceremony that they do have as a special award that we give to members. But I would like criteria to be developed. But I would accept that as friendly.
We have had a motion, a friendly amendment. Can I ask for a vote so that we can move forward with Patrick as the chair and anyone who would like to participate sending their wish to Anu, who will then forward it to Patrick, and then I'll put a timetable on this, by our November Metro Access meeting, have a finalized motion to be presented and thought about, and for our first meeting of the AAC in December to do a final vote. Anyone opposed? The motion passes. Patrick, Doris, and everybody else, you have your work in front of you. Have something ready for us to hear about at Metro Access. And now for the Hedinger Award discussion. And typically, I believe we have always done this in executive session or what have you. We only have one nominee that I am aware of.
That is it. That's all we had. We had more than one nominations, but all the nominations received were for one individual.
Okay. Well, yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
So,
Mr. Chair, I move approval of this nominee by acclamation.
Yes, without dissent, we will accept this nominee by acclamation and leave it to staff to move forward with the notifications, the ordering of the award, and setting the timing for the giving of the award.
I'll second that, Phil.
And again, without dissent, we'll move forward in that direction. I sense there's a strong feeling that the group would like to have our own separate award at about the same time. So I would request that when we do have a ceremony, be it virtual or in person, that be in January or February, which gives us time to complete our business since we've already completed Hedinger. And can I have a motion from the committee requesting that the award ceremony this year be in January or February?
So moved.
Second.
I think in February. This is Thomas.
Okay. Having had the discussion, without dissent, the motion is passed and the request is forwarded to Anu and Mr. Blake and Ms. Lopez, who I think is still here. And we can now move on to public comment.
Thank you, Chair Posner, for public comments. We have Lynette Washington and Yvette Washington. So Lynette Washington, if you would unmute yourself and make your public comments, you would have 3 minutes.
Did you say Eve?
Lynette
Washington speaking.
Yes, go ahead.
How you doing? Good evening to everybody.
Good evening.
Okay, my comment is about the Metro Access bringing back the share rides. I started riding Metro Access last year, and I was approved, and I'm very happy when I was riding it. Never had a complaint. Nice drivers, on time, clean vans, clean buses, just me and the driver, and I felt very, very secure because of COVID. And I hadn't been going out that much, but the buses come. They come on time, like I said, and everything is fine. I have no problems. I'm not concerned about anything. The driver's wearing a mask. I'm wearing a mask. And, you know, they wipe off the seats, and, they, you know, everything is fine for me. Now you're bringing back share rides. They say they started today. I'm a little uncomfortable with that because a lot of people on the van, elder people, they wear the mask over their face, and sometimes they have to pull it down because they say they can't breathe. And I'm very concerned about riding the bus, the van, or car where people in the car and their masks are pulled down underneath their nose because they say they can't breathe and they have an oxygen tank beside them. I understand their problem, but it's not fair to me. I get COVID tested every month. I have my vaccinations and all that, but I'm just a little concerned about people crowding the buses and the masks are pulled down underneath their face. I'm concerned about my safety and other people's safety and the driver's safety. And I really pray that y'all go back to just having one person on the van. I like it like that until, I guess, next year or two, whenever the virus prayfully dissipates out the air. But right now, I'm really concerned about my safety riding the van or a car with other passengers in it being crowded. If it's just me and the driver, I feel very safe because I sit 6 feet apart away from the driver. In a sedan or a bus, I don't know how it's going to be set up with the passengers. And some people are telling me when you have share rides, the person that gets on first is the last one that gets let off the bus. But if you have a scheduled appointment, that's going to make me late being dropped off last. I've never had a share ride. Like I said, I came into the program last year when the COVID was going on, and it's just me and the driver, and I feel very, very comfortable like that. And I really pray that y'all will reevaluate this situation and go back to happening like it was before. Maybe next year you can come back with the share rides, but it's just not comfortable riding the van with other people because I don't know their vaccination status. They don't know mine. And like I said, a lot of people do not wear their masks appropriately over their faces, and I'm just concerned for my safety. I really am. Okay, that's my comment.
Thank you. Mr. Blake, would you like to address that?
Good afternoon.
Yes, and I spoke to Ms. Washington earlier today, and I encourage her to call tonight and to the next meeting as well. I hear her concerns, I really do, and I sympathize with those concerns because I've heard them from other customers and I've heard them from drivers. The way we protect ourselves on the customer side is the mask, and each week we report our mask violations, if you will, because as you all know now, we can look into the vehicles. And quite frankly, the customers have been much better at adhering to the mask mandate than even some of our drivers at times. So, and also the thing that Metro is doing is we're following the science and we strongly believe in ventilation. Ventilation, along with the mask wearing, are the keys for us to protecting our drivers as well as our customers. And I do hear Ms. Washington's recommendation that we wait till next year. But the fact of the matter is people who are not eligible for Metro Access, they're sharing rides in places that are, you know, other places around the country. Paratransit services are conducting shared rides. I mean, Metro, as I pointed out when we were first talking about this, Metro Access is probably one of the last major urban areas paratransit service that's going back to shared rides. In this region, schools are reopened. the places we would take, not to pick on Ms. Washington, but the places we would take her and other customers from their home to their destination. These places are open. And we're getting back to normal in this region per our national as well as our local leadership. As we've made a commitment, if something changes, if something dramatic happens in terms of this region's fight against the pandemic, we will quickly turn back to direct and single passenger trips. But at this point in time, we believe that following the science and moving in the direction that this region is getting back to normal, well, part of that normality is Metro Access being the shared ride public transit service equivalent that the ADA calls it to be. We're not closing the door on not, you know, ending shared rides, but at this moment, and today was the first day, we're going to proceed for now.
Good afternoon.
Yes, Mr. Blake, if I might ask you.
I'm sorry.
With CDC recommendations and with others, the most at risk are going to people with suppressed immune systems. And if there is a way, I know everyone must be treated equally, but we're talking about safety, that those who have suppressed immune systems be given sedan options, because they are the most at risk.
Yeah. I'm sorry, were you finished, sir?
Yes, I am.
Good afternoon. I was late getting on. I'm Yvette Washington. I had spoke to Ms. Sharma, and I told her I would call back. My sister just called in, and I'm giving my input as well. I am a Metro Access rider. I started last year, and my sentiments are basically like my sister. I have underlying health conditions, and the gentleman said there's ventilation on the bus. I beg your pardon, there's no ventilation on the bus. If the driver doesn't cut the air on or open the window, you suffocate in the back. And if it's a lot of people back there, it's hard to breathe with these masks on. My concern is for my safety as well as the driver, because the driver is the first person that comes in contact with the passenger. If he or she gets sick, then the whole bus is sick. I realize that they said they lost money, but for real, what about people's health and their safety? Is it worth having a lawsuit? Because that's what's going to happen. I've heard drivers said, one driver told me she had 18 years in, and if she survived COVID, she's going to sue Metro Access, and then she's going to quit her job. Are you all really serious about this? People's safety should come first. I'm not worried about the dollar and cents. I'm worried about safety. I don't care what other states are doing, what they want to do. I'm talking about people that catch Metro Access that have disabilities. You have to be concerned about us, because for real, I will call the American Disabilities Association, and I will own Metro Access, and all those that are in charge will be fired because of the lack of responsibility for their passengers. I'm saying reevaluate what you're doing, wait till next year, next spring, or whatever. It makes common sense. It's not about the dollar and cents, it's about people's safety in their lives. And I'm saying, as a passenger who rides it, you all have got to do better. Got to do better. That's all I have to say about that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Washington. And I don't know who said we lost money when you're talking about Metro Access. I can assure you this was not a money decision, and money has nothing to do with this. But again, if the driver is not keeping the windows open as we've instructed them to do, which creates the ventilation, if the driver is not putting on the AC when it's warm or the heat to blow the air in when it's cool, we certainly want to hear from the customers about those situations, because that's in fact what we've instructed the drivers to do, not only to protect the customers, but to protect themselves. And again, I hear the concerns of you and your sister, and I've heard it from other customers, and I've literally talked to dozens, if not hundreds, of customers on this topic. They call me directly, and I take my time and speak with each one individually. At this point in time, we believe that we are taking the right approach, the safe approach, and the equitable approach for people who are using public transportation. So we're going to, at this time, we're going to continue to move forward with the shared ride service on Metro Access Paratransit Service.
Mr. Blake, one question. We know the buses have the new filtering system put in them, the city buses, the WMATA buses? Do the Metro Access vans have that similar protection in their circulation systems? And if not, again, I would consider people with comorbidities and suppressed immune systems be given priority for single rides in sedans.
And the question, to direct this to your question, the filtration system, no, we've not placed those in our vehicles because, again, on our assessment, there those for the type of vehicles we have, the fact that we have those windows, in especially in the sedans, but even on the vans, we're getting much more air in the blowing of the clear air and the circulation of the air than those filters would really allow, given the location they would have to be placed. It's really hard to place one in a sedan, but even in the van, it would be way in the back behind the last chair on the passenger side. We did not find that as a effective means of protecting the customers or the drivers, certainly not more effective than the ventilation of having the windows open and utilizing the HVAC system in each of the, the air conditioning units in each of the vehicles. I am taking, as I pointed out to you though, I have taken some calls from customers with the issues you've described, and we're talking about it. And also I want customers to know, and don't say that, well, Mr. Blake said, I'll never be in a shared ride, even though we're shared rides. The number of shared rides, while certainly won't be zero as it were during the pandemic, the likelihood that a customer is going to experience many shared rides, at least in the short term, is still smaller than what it would have been pre-pandemic, because we're utilizing not only Metro Access, but we're still utilizing, through the thousands of customers who've signed up, Abilities Ride. So we're spreading trips throughout the region, utilizing a host of resources. So it's not like we're slowing down on Abilities Ride, and now that we're shared ride, we can put everybody else back on the vans. Our goal right now in our assessment, let's say that, I won't say a goal, but I will say in our assessment, the likelihood that we will have, and the way you measure productivity in paratransit is a, well, different people do it differently, but here in WMATA for years, we've always measured it as passengers per revenue hour. That just means how many passengers are on a van in any given hour of service that van is out there on the street that you see. When we're super efficient and we're running like a well-oiled machine trying to emulate Metro bus, that number could be as high as 1.2 or 1.3 or 4 passengers per hour. So that's more than one person in a vehicle per hour. Since the pandemic, we've been less than 0.6, so less than one. And I do not anticipate going above one throughout this initial phase of shared rides. So what does that mean? Does that mean you'll never be in a vehicle with more than one person? No, it doesn't mean that. But the likelihood that customers will experience trip after trip where there's more than one person in a van in any given hour is very small, because we're utilizing a range of resources to spread customer trips out, from the Ubers, the taxis, and just a huge number of Metro Access vehicles that are out there on the street compared to how much demand we actually have. And that was all part of our pandemic planning. Let's keep the drivers employed so that there's no driver shortage coming out of the pandemic, as we see in some other paratransit properties. And let's keep enough vehicles on the street so that we can, in fact, spread the trips out. And that's where we're trying to have shared rides, which helps protect the service overall, but also keep the number of shared rides to a minimum.
Mr. Blake, thank you. I'll ask anew to put this topic on the Metro Access agenda for the end of the month.
It's already on the agenda. Thank you.
Fantastic. And we'll now go back to the customers. Barbara Millville. You're up, Barbara.
Hey, thanks. Barbara Millville here. Great presentation about the complaints and commendations, and this comment pertains to that. So there's this thing called survivorship bias. Not sure if anybody has heard about that, but basically it states that those commenting are the ones who are still surviving, or in other words, those who are still riding. And I am wondering if Metro has a procedure in place that would address the issues of the riders who have chosen to stop riding Metro, whether that be Metro Rail, bus, or the paratransit. And then accordingly, are there any special efforts in place to try to get those riders back? Because as was stated in the PowerPoint earlier, this type of thing kind of falls off the radar. And the issue may still exist, is just that people just kind of left. So that would be a great topic for some other day. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. I don't see any other hands from the public anew. Do you see anyone from the public?
No more hands from the public, Chair Posner. However, Doris and Marcy have their hands up.
Okay.
And Patrick.
Let's go. Doris, Marcy, and Patrick. 3 minutes each. Take it, Doris, you're on the clock.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I wanted in public comment to reinforce something that Kelly Simino said. I think that we need a process and we need to continue pretty quickly to get a process in order that the complaints, particularly high priority complaints like elevator damages, escalator damages, problems with metro bus ramps and low floors. And I would put in that pot enunciators as well. And there may be others. How they are going to address them and what the timeline is for getting those high priority access issues addressed, because, for example, damages of elevators affect whether people with disabilities have access to the metro system at all, and have always been a high ADA priority, and really we should be correcting those within 24 hours or less or whatever. And if it's an issue, sometimes they say it's an issue of getting a part or whatever, but I have seen several occasions when the courthouse metro station has been down for 10 days to 2 weeks at a time, just within the last couple of years, several times. So I think we need to find out what happens to those. What's the communication back from customer service? A communication that says to somebody that we send it on to the right authority isn't sufficient. And so I hope that we will take this up more and that we get some real answers from WMATA in the very near future about what's going to be the procedure, not only to get it fixed, but to communicate that to the customer. Thank you.
Thank you, Doris. We're over time right now. So Marcy, you have 2 minutes.
Just inquiry. Is anybody from the ACC committee going to after
This is Anu. To reiterate Marcy's question, she's asking if anybody from the AAC going to APTA.
I don't believe so.
How come?
Where is APTA going to be this year?
Florida.
Florida.
We've never, this is Pat Sheehan. We've never, first of all, we don't have a budget for it from the AAC. So if anyone was going, we would have to spend our own money to fly down there and, you know, pay for the hotel.
I would ask for a motion that we request Ms. Lopez and Mr. Blake to look into the ability of APTA to be a teleconference, because many of the large national and international conferences are now both in person and online. And if APTA has an online component, see if there is a way that we can have a representative attend online.
The reason why I'm asking,
will do.
Many,
thank you very much.
Send a representative, and now it has been years to APTA.
Yes. Thank you very much. And with that, let's move on to Ms. Clavia for the bus rail report.
Oh, sure. Okay. Starting with the bus rail draft for the October meeting minutes. As you recall, we had guests from the Arlington County, Department of Transportation, which discussed the one floating bus stop that they have there in Arlington County. In fact, one of the staff towards the end showed us the photo of that one bus stop, and it really wasn't clear about what impediments there might have been or flaws in design. So we asked for another photo, and by the way, that hasn't been received. We also, Carol asked the representative and the team from Arlington, how would a person, be they a person with a disability or not, how would a person know they have to cross a bike path to get to the floating bus stop? And I don't think there was an answer, at least not in our draft minutes. Carol also asked what may be on a floating bus stop. For example, is there a newspaper box? What kind of seating or benches there might be? I don't think we had an idea about that. Maybe if they provide us a photo, a better photo, we can see what is on a floating bus stop and maybe what we would suggest to do about whatever may be on there. Now you remember that at the last meeting, ordinarily we review the minutes of the prior meeting and therefore thereon take a vote as to approve it or not. And unfortunately, I didn't have the minutes available to me at the time. And so I postponed a review of those minutes to this meeting. And basically, it was the first discussion of floating bus stops with a full team from the District of Columbia, the Department of Transportation. and they discussed the kinds of floating bus stops and tried to describe how they arrive at the design. During that meeting, Matt Johnson, who actually is from Montgomery County, he was online with us. And Matt Johnson, who is with Montgomery County and is familiar with floating bus stops, mentioned that there's no national standard to help designers of floating bus stops or traffic engineers. And so we'll hear in next week's meeting from Montgomery County. Maybe we'll look into that further. Patrick, during the discussion, mentioned that there had been and is a conflict between cars and bicycles. And now the attempts to improve that situation, reduce the conflict between cars and bikes, has inadvertently resulted in a kind of conflict between bicycles and pedestrians, and in particular, people with disabilities and seniors who have a much tougher time now to cross bike paths.
You know, you are 5 minutes into Metro Access time. Please wrap up.
Okay. I might mention too that I think it was Philippa who mentioned that the same sort of thing. And in that meeting towards the end, Debbie Fisher talked about helping train people with disabilities, particularly with cognitive disabilities, and how to use fixed route travel. Afterwards, Debbie did a summary in writing, and I have that, and I'd like to attach it to the set of minutes. And I also, I think I discussed at the time, maybe we should have a full-blown bus rail committee discussion of how to assist people with cognitive disabilities in terms of transportation. So,
thank you, Tina. That was also part of the discussion we had with the new federal board members, who are very interested in young people with disabilities.
Okay, so we should put that on a future agenda. So I think that wraps it up. Can I get a vote on approving the minutes of September? The September one was the
kick. So moved, Tino.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Is there any objections to approving the September minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are approved for adoption.
Thank you. Very efficient. Next. Mr. Semelford.
Yes, sir. You know about me and efficiency when I give my minutes.
We're on the clock.
All right. So let me be brief about this. So the most salient things about our committee meeting for Metro Access, hi, I'm Paul Semelford, the subcommittee chairperson, is the first thing we discuss is we are, as a committee, agreed last month to discontinue the 10-minute pre-arrival call. And this was a pilot that went on for about almost 2 years with less than 100 customers. Unfortunately, getting feedback from customers such as myself and others about some of the glows and then many, I guess, pains of it and challenges. It did not, the technology did not work out entirely as it's intended. So we decided to put it to sleep for now until we get to another better piece of technology to use sometime in the future. We did talk extensively at last meeting about the return of shared rides. As Mr. Blake stated, it is a modified shared ride going back into service today on November 1st, and it's constantly being being evaluated and reassessed. Again, there'll be no more than 3 people total riding at a time, if not less, as Mr. Blake has said previously at this meeting. Those who are in a sedan are still riding alone. And if someone wants to request a reasonable accommodation to ride alone, they can definitely put that forth with necessary medical documentation. Whether or not it will be guaranteed, it will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. But you can put that forward, but there's no guarantee it will be approved. In that respect. Also, I would like to, as we return to shared rides, as I look at staff here, do remind customers, because I had a trip today where amazingly the driver brought a customer on without a mask, but finally realized he didn't have a mask and luckily offered him a mask and settled that issue. But we, while Metro Access I've seen is very aggressive about, you know, reminding, educating customers through every process possible when they pick up their phone and dial the number about wearing a mask in that sedan, maybe I suggest we put, you know, like you've seen in some other paratransits, a, you know, picture thing about outside the van before you enter. But again, I just put that out there for that safety bit. The other piece was the Metro Access GPS system update. 2 GPS systems were tested, one with Waze that was larger over the summer in terms of directions and getting to places. And the other was a Garmin device, which was much smaller. And based on driver feedback, Garmin was more preferred. And that will begin to be installed in the entire fleet over the next several months, according to the director of Metro Access. The last piece that was discussed was eligibility and updates. Right now, they are not accepting in-person appointments or walk-ins. Everything is done by email or by phone interviews. Eligibility is done that way, best as possible with, you know, whatever necessary medical documentation. And the other piece is customers at this point who are found eligible can use their state licensed, ID or drive.
Samuel, please wrap up in 1 minute.
All right. And that's about it for Metro Access.
Thank you so much. Ms. Lopez, you've been very patient. We have 5 minutes left in the meeting.
Oh, thank you, sir. I think that I would like to just let you know that APTA does not seem to have an online participation this year. They're going to have their conference November 6th in Orlando, but I don't seem to find any online information. If I find something, I will let you know.
Thank you so much. I will be happy to go down to Orlando since I'm in Gainesville. But I recommend to them that because of the COVID and transportation, they might consider doing some virtual conferences. The FAVE roundtables that were done over the summer by the Department of Transportation were done virtually. And APTA actually participated in those. So you might
They actually did that last year.
Yeah.
They had their events online last year, but it doesn't look like they have that this year.
But it's not too late to ask.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
You're terrific.
Bill, can I take 30 seconds and ask Tino a question?
Well, we had Vanessa first, so Vanessa.
Sorry, go ahead.
If you will take your 1 minute start, and then we'll go to Patrick.
Yes, Patrick. Patrick?
Yes.
Vanessa, if yes.
Hey, I'm here.
Vanessa first.
I was having a time taking myself off mute. I just wanted Mr. Blake to clarify when he say no more than three passengers, because today I had one of my coworkers said there was a person in a wheelchair and then two other individuals plus the driver. So when you say three, no more than three, are you talking about no more than three clients?
Plus no more than three clients.
Okay, so total four individuals in the van.
Three Metro Access, total three.
So you're saying that person reported four passengers plus the driver? No.
It was three passengers, a wheelchair, and two other clients. Plus
right. Yeah. If you okay, yes, that's a total of four people. So that's the maximum number.
Okay. I just needed clarification. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Well done in under a minute. So Patrick,
Tino. Bill. Tino, I sent you an email last night on reimagining ride-on in Montgomery County. Did you get that?
Yes, I did, and it was perfect. Great.
Beautiful. Let's maybe talk about that, and we can maybe I'd be interested in what you have to say about that.
Sure.
Good.
Definitely.
Yeah. Great. Okay, you'll share that with Phil and everybody else.
Yes.
Good. Indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Tina. Good. Thanks, Phil.
Chair,
no, please.
I just will take 10 seconds, make my announcement. Anybody looking to send their public comments can do so via email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone has been wonderful today. The car worked. Everybody was succinct, and I think we got a lot accomplished. Look forward to our bus rail on Monday. And everybody remember, Thursday, big finance subcommittee meeting will be online if you want to listen. And you can also listen to my 10 minutes to the board last week, if you would like to. And other than that, everybody have a safe trip home. William S.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Remember, Sunday is the time change. And yeah. Monday is our bus and rail.
That's only Monday.
Hey, everybody.
Doris, you had your hand up. Did you have any comments? Okay, she's not.
Thank you.